debate over school bathrooms is playing out in the news and on social media this week.
With using the staff bathroom, I felt like I was being segregated off. Like, here are the boys, here are the girls, this is me. And I didn't like that. I wanted to help blend in with all the other girls.
These high school girls are telling the school that they're uncomfortable with exposing their bodies to biological men. Why is the school ignoring that?
This is the Trevor Carey Show. On the Valley's Power Talk.
A couple of days ago, we told you about parents worked up over all-user, gender-neutral bathrooms at a new middle school.
Well, you know, overall, it is working for them. They say there are some instances that they're dealing with.
All-user restrooms is what we're calling them.
I feel really fortunate that we were able to do something that was really forward-thinking. I mean, this all came about 4 or 5 years ago when we started talking about it. And at that time, there was no one really that was doing this.
Yeah, because it's sick. Notice how the news said, notice parents are worked up. Worked up. Kids are our most precious resource. They're our future. And you schools and you teachers, we entrust our kids into your care. And listen, there are many wonderful teachers. There are good schools, and they're going to do right by parents, and they're going to do right by kids. But this is about this Marxist teachers who care more about their agenda. And by that, I probably mean, I don't know, 90% of California schools, right? They care about their policies, man, more than the kids and the families that they're actually hurting. And here we go. Let's go down to Long Beach. Ready? The district unveiled plans to build a locker room to allow teenage students of both genders to shower and to dress together. Breitbart's Warner Todd Houston writes, the district has a long history of pushing the gay agenda. Measure E, create all gender inclusive facilities. The instructor stated that it creates a safe space for people who might otherwise be uncomfortable. Well, I can't, you know what? If you brought over middle school students this weekend, Saturday, let's just say, and you had a hot tub out back, and one of the 12-year-olds said to the other parents when they got in the car to go back home, hey, how was it? Oh, it was cool. Mr. Carey, he allowed us to take all our clothes off around the girls and the boys, and we all sat naked out in the hot tub. And, yeah, oh, actually, I put on some of the girls' panties. They let me do that, too. Son, what are you saying happened? Oh, yeah, Mr. Carey, he told us that it's you know how quick I'd be in jail that night. You'd be in jail that night as a parent if you pulled any stunt like that and a kid told and a parent called law enforcement, right? Wouldn't you be in trouble? Would you let your kids go down to the end of the block with another family that did that? Of course not. I don't know. Maybe some of you will these days. I don't know. I hope that of course not applies to everybody, but well, there's teachers. There's school administrators, there's politicians that have, there are people that do want this. And tell me, what's the difference than being in a all-gender, both gender, 150 gender shower, all being naked together kids at school as opposed to a backyard party in your on your block? This is going to permit boys and girls to shower dress together in the same room. They sent an email to parents. I don't know, maybe it's time to actually fulfill the title that the DOJ gave us, right? Last month, the California Teacher Association held a conference advising teachers, on how to work themselves around parents, really. How to work themselves around conservative communities. How to work themselves around school principals on issues of gender identity and sexual orientation. Here's how far they went. This is from the California Teachers Association. As far as you tout the surveillance of students' Google searches, look at students' internet activity, listen to students' hallway conversations, and we're talking like sixth graders here, to target them for personal invitations to the LGBTQIA+ clubs that are on campus. And then don't tell their parents. Members of California's biggest teachers union, that's what that is. It was they're pushing these politics on kids. And this was audio that was leaked out from an October conference on the California Teachers Association. Quoted here, speakers went so far as to tout the surveillance of Google searches. Guys, this is what they're doing. This is the 2021 LGBTQIA+ Issues Conference in Palm Springs. It's titled Beyond the Binary, Identity and Imagining Possibilities. And this is for the California Teachers Association. And somebody recorded it. And they had all these seminars encouraging all these LGBT clubs for middle schoolers. Sixth graders, man. There was actually an audio clip that had one of the teachers explaining why these clubs keep no rosters. Her quote was, sometimes we don't really want to keep records because if parents get upset that their kids are coming, we're like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe they came. You know, we would never want a kid to get in trouble for attending if their parents are upset. That was a quote from this, the leaked audio from this conference in Palm Springs, California Teachers Association, as well. In the club that she runs, she was quoted as saying, what happens in this room stays in this room. This is California Teachers Conference. Another teacher led a seminar about how we run gay-straight alliance clubs in conservative communities. See, man, they're training soldiers, Marxist soldiers, to fight back against traditional families. That's what it is. That's the Marxist goal. That was the Black Lives Matter National Charter, right? To reinvent the nuclear family. To reinvent it, first you got to get rid of it. They want to make sure the kids keep coming back. They said, when we start doing our virtual learning, I'm quoting for this, we totally stalk what they were doing on Google when they weren't doing schoolwork. One of them was Googling Trans Day of Visibility, and we're like, check. We're going to invite that kid when we get back on campus. Whenever they followed the Google Doodle links or whatever, the teacher said, we made notes of those kids. We made notes of the things that they bring up with each other in chats or emails or whatever. This one teacher announced the leverage that she has running the morning announcements. She says, I'm the one who controls the messaging. Everybody says, oh, Miss Calderia, you're so sweet. You volunteer to do that. She says, I volunteer so I control the information. She says, the principal may flinch, but she flinches privately. See, the principal wouldn't want the LGBTQ going out over the morning announcements, but the principal flinches, but she flinches privately. See, they have this power, this control, right? They explained to conference attendees that, quote, next year we're going to do just a little mind trick on our sixth graders. They were last to go through this presentation, and the gender stuff was the last thing we talked about. So next year, they're going to be going first with this presentation. And we'll get these, there will be objections to this. They said one mom had hoped to wait before having a talk with her middle school student about sex and gender identities. This is a mom saying that, you know, it shouldn't be taught in school. And this California Teachers Association conference said, I know, so sad, right? Honestly, your 12-year-old probably knew all that, right? and they all laugh. Guys, I'm telling you, it's all under the title of it's a spiritual battle. You got teachers. And again, there are many good teachers, and what you do is amazing. And you good teachers, I know you know who I'm talking about. I know right now, if you're a teacher and you're hearing this, you're like, you're probably thinking of somebody's name in your head right now that tries to coerce these kids into believing that they actually are LGBTQIA, right? Now, I'm not going to say there aren't some kids that struggle, especially during that time period, man, puberty, and with all, I mean, a society, you know, being a, let's see, when did I turn 13? That would have been 1979. I turned 13. So I was a teenager in the 80s, and I wasn't inundated. I mean, the only thing I can think of LGBTQIA might have been, I don't know, Boy George? Is that comma, chameleon, right? I mean, you know, that was even before RuPaul came along, right? And that was about it. I didn't... In my high school, Ridgecrest, California, Burroughs High School, 1981 to 1984, I can't say that I knew anybody that publicly stated or privately stated or I even knew that was gay. Now, there was a cat. We called him Boy Gordon because he called himself Boy Gordon. He kind of dressed like Boy George. You know, California, the 80s. Of course, somebody's going to do that. So maybe Boy Gordon. I never saw him with a dude. So, no, we weren't inundated with that. Today that they are, all the way to teachers. I mean, they watch TV, they go online, they watch something on Netflix. It's encouraging them to do this. And now you would think the last line of maybe not having to discuss stuff like this would be where you go to learn reading, writing, and arithmetic. But this is deliberate grooming of children. And this is just the first step. And I don't even want to start talking about what the next steps are going to be, because we know in Colorado they're changing the term sex offender. Remember that professor at Old Dominion wanted to change the term pedophile to minor attracted people, MAPS, remember? Well, that professor got taken out. So at least we're not to that, but that's the next step, right? This is, and if you stand up to it, they call her America's mom. Her name is Sharona Bishop. She's one there in Loudoun County, Virginia, she was in Colorado. She's an activist mom in Colorado. And she actually had the FBI break down her door and raid the home because they're standing up to school boards, standing up to in this spiritual battle. And see, their success showing right now. And locally, please, with your school district, parents, get involved. And if your kids are going to be in public school, how could you not be involved, wanting to know, wanting to get involved with this right now? Well, I work two full-time jobs, and I know it's the life boogie is extremely hard, but we're going to have parents. And I know that, like that principal that I told you, the California Teacher Association, they're saying, oh, the principal flinches, but flinches in private. We need to give those principals that are flinching over this stuff our support. These grassroots organizations are having a great deal of success, because if you're a grassroots organization standing up against these school boards and what they're doing, especially here in California, you're a domestic threat by the federal government. This mom, Sharona Bishop, last week the FBI kicked down her door, raided her home. Boy, this is state police, is it not? I mean, isn't it amazing that you can have like Antifa and Black Lives Matter carrying out all these attacks? And they actually have targets that they're actually going over. All the violence. If the FBI wanted to arrest members of Antifa or members of Black Lives Matter who were involved with burning and looting and killing, they could do it easily. I mean, it wouldn't take that much effort at all for the FBI to actually arrest people. But no, the FBI, by not arresting people for that, is enabling people for this kind of behavior to continue, and they're turning their focus on the domestic terrorist parents that stand up for what, like, Long Beach is doing right now. And it's amazing that the indoctrination makes kids say things like this. Is a teacher right here at the start, but listen to these students.
We created these spaces based on input from our students. So this was for them.
It's a lot better.
This is really clean. It's much more comfortable. I actually don't like going to the bathroom outside of my own house. And these just kind of feel like a super safe place to be.
But does she mind being right next to boys?
No. Not at all.
This is the Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk. The Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk.
Governor Cuomo out the door in New York, and now his brother is out at CNN, Chris Cuomo.
Send Fredo off to do this. Send Fredo off to do that. Send Fredo to pick somebody up at the airport.
The little brother, Fredo. That's what people would call Chris Cuomo that in public, and he would want to fight him, literally.
Let Fredo take care of some Mickey Mouse nightclub somewhere.
Yeah, he never got it, did he, Chris? You never got it, did you, buddy?
And I want to spend.
Yeah, Fredo is out at CNN. I don't know why that is so exciting to me. I mean, I'm just so excited. That's not right to be excited about the demise of somebody's paycheck, is it? Yeah, I'm sorry. He faked his COVID. Remember when he faked his COVID? Remember he got caught out when he was supposed to be quarantining, and then he gets in a fight with a guy? The whole thing. A new bill House Republicans are describing as a parent's bill of rights would write into federal education law requirements for curriculum and spending. Is this going to make it through? I don't know. They said it's about empowering parents to give them the backup they need. They want to go up against a school board. Well, good. I'm glad Republicans are standing up for this. They've got members of Congress behind them, said Communications Director for House Republican Leader Kevin McCarthy. Quoted to the Federalist, also Missouri Republican Senator Josh Hawley released a similar bill that makes sure that disclosures of school spending and all of that. And it would give parents a right, listen, to visit their kids in school during school hours. Another basic right, parent right, that a lot of government-run schools have, a lot of parents have had to go get a lawyer to be able to find out what's actually being taught. Now, do you want parents sitting in the classroom hour on end? I don't think that's good for learning. No, if I were a teacher, I wouldn't want to feel like that's going on. But you as a parent, you got the right to know the curriculum, to actually be able to see it, look at it. I mean, what these teachers and what these school boards and what these superintendents don't realize is without we the people, we fund you. Everything from the pen in your hand to the desk that you're sitting at to your retirement benefit, we pay for that. We are your boss. You school trustees, you're elected. We're your boss. So we're looking here to see what Republicans are going to do to try and get parents to get back control of their kids' schools. But finally, I can give you something about Republicans are actually standing up. The letter from Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee to U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland that they got documents from a whistleblower that state the FBI is actually using, yes, they are, counterterrorism tactics to actually go out and investigate parents that are being considered domestic terrorists because they are voicing their First Amendment right. A.G. Garland lied about it. We knew it. We knew it. Can you even believe that this is what you're hearing coming through your speakers? That this is happening? That parents talking to school boards are being looked at by the federal government, by federal law enforcement, as domestic terrorists. And the things that they're standing up against used to be things that would never come within a country mile of a schoolroom. So the document the whistleblower put out states the FBI, and this is a letter from Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee, said the FBI is adding threat tags to parents. Threat tags. See, Garland lied. He lied. So maybe you already have a threat tag on you if you stood up at any school board meetings, right? They're using the Patriot Act to investigate parents at school board meetings. A letter signed by Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio, ranking member of the House Judiciary, said, "We are now in receipt of a protected disclosure from a whistleblower showing that the FBI's counterterrorism division is compiling threat assessments related to parents." They are. Threat assessment. Maybe you already got a tag on you, right? Well, see, it's all part of we got to destroy what we got going on right now because we have to build back better, don't we? That was the campaign from Basement Boy Bolshevik Biden all last summer and into the fall, right? We're going to build back better. And that's just a tentacle off the Great Reset. If you don't know what that is, spend some time on DuckDuckGo. Look that up, the Great Reset, Klaus Schwab. You'll be amazed at what's all going on. But, yeah, build back better. It should have been obvious during the campaign when he said we're going to build back better. If you're going to build back better, what do you have to do? To rebuild, you got to tear down what's in place, right? That's right. Build back better. He's Breitbart's news policy reporter. We're going to talk to Sean Moran next right here.
This is the Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk. Listening to the Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk.
Like to welcome on to the show for the first time, getting to meet Breitbart, Sean Moran. Sean, you are the news policy reporter. Welcome to Power Talk, Sean. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
It's actually Trevor.
Sorry, Trevor.
It's the first time we met. How would you know my name? Come on, now we met. Now you know my name. Sean, how did you get started working for Breitbart?
Well, it's an amazing thing because I used to work in D.C. as a policy analyst, and after a certain amount of time, I decided, why don't I start talking about and interviewing a lot of the people I wrote about when I was a policy analyst in D.C.
Now, so what's a, let me stop you, Sean. Let me stop you. What's a policy analyst actually do? What does that entail?
So I worked for a conservative activist organization, Americans for Prosperity, and I helped just write about healthcare and technology and a lot of the issues going on in Congress. And then after a while, I just wanted to, you know, get a sense by talking to the congressmen and senators I wrote about. So I thought that Breitbart would be the right place to go to and just continue covering all things at Congress and all the issues going on there. So it's been fun ever since.
Did you know Jeff Crank by chance, Americans for Prosperity?
That name sounds very familiar.
Yeah, I guess you guys are a big organization. I knew him in Colorado when you said that. That name registered. So how long have you been writing at Breitbart?
Just about 4 years now. I joined up right after the 2016 election. So basically January. So I covered everything going in Congress during the Trump administration between Obamacare, the tax cuts, the couple of impeachment trials, everything going on with the Russia investigation, and then the 2020 presidential election. Now we're just going full steam ahead with all things with the Biden administration as well.
Not much to write about over those 4 years, has there? I tell you, every day I have the easiest job doing a talk show in California. You wake up and your material's right in front of you every single day. Each day it gets crazier. On the surface, Sean, what is the Biden administration telling us that Build Back Better actually is? And then we'll go dig into what it is. What, on the surface, if you had to speak to a Democrat group out there, what would you say that Biden is describing this as?
Yeah, well, Trevor, it's a really amazing thing. And as we've extensively reported at Breitbart News, President Joe Biden, his congressional majority, you know, whether it was Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer, have kind of pinned this as the human infrastructure bill. That's what they're calling it, in which it would put through all these new social programs and climate change programs, paid family leave, more money for tax credits for electric vehicles, you know, all these expanded child tax credits, expansion of Affordable Care Act or Obamacare credits, and all that sort of thing. So it really creates this new sort of expansion of social welfare programs and climate change programs for what they believe the 21st century needs. And it would spend roughly $1.75 trillion over 10 years, although that number kind of changes depending on how you look at it. That's what they say it is. But that's really the layman's, you know, understanding of what the average Democrat would want to know that this bill acts as.
All right. Here's how Joe tried to tell us.
We have to do more than just build back better. We have to build back better. We have to do more than just build back better. We have to build back better.
I guess so. Sean, are you saying that at this $1.7 trillion, it's really not about bridges, but about batteries?
Yeah, that's basically it. And this is part of President Joe Biden's two-pronged strategy when it comes to this Build Back Better agenda he's talking about. You know, he passed this so-called bipartisan infrastructure bill through Congress and signed it recently. This one is less about the physical roads and bridges. This bill is more about expanding these welfare programs and all that sort of thing, including amnesty for illegal aliens, all as well as boosting the deficit and all these new programs. That doesn't necessarily involve the physical infrastructure, but kind of what they view as the necessary sort of programs that would increase all of the, you know, and benefit all these, or at least what they would say benefit Americans across the board.
I read today the Build Back Better bill gives big media $1.9 billion as well. So I would think that media is not part of infrastructure, but I mean, it keeps going on and on and on with this. My guest, Sean Moran, Breitbart's news policy reporter. We're talking Build Back Better. Now, I would say, Sean, that when he was campaigning, basement boy Bolshevik Biden down in his basement last summer, when he would talk about Build Back Better, I was thinking to rebuild, you got to kind of tear down what's in place, right?
Yeah, and that's a very good point there, because a lot of this this bill that he's trying to put through is really trying to transform the nation through which they kind of view the older, you know, more free market-oriented system is something that they can't really rely upon. And this is really the thing that Biden is trying to compare himself. Nancy Pelosi has compared this bill as a sort of New Deal, like FDR's program or LBJ's Great Society, where they created, you know, Medicare and Medicaid. FDR created Social Security. So they're really trying to transform society with these legislation. Mind you, it has been cut down from its original $3.5 trillion price tag to only $1.75 trillion. But that still represents, along with that other so-called bipartisan infrastructure bill, you know, trillions of dollars in new legislation that would create a climate workers' core, where they would try to, you know, clean up, you know, trees. It involves tree equity, billions of dollars there for tree equity. You know, all sorts of new programs that really just creates new aspects to try to re-envision American society.
Tree equity. Well, we know this $1.7 trillion now. They at the office of they, some economists have said, well, there's a lot of sunset clauses built into this that should expire. But, you know, once they're giving money away, they're not going to stop it. Democrats don't do that. They will keep extending this, and that'll probably be $3 trillion plus. I guess you're trying to show that capitalism doesn't work. Do you think they're going that far?
Yeah, they're certainly trying to expand a lot of these programs that's very critical of, you know, American capitalism, try to push away, you know, the ability for small businesses, especially as many of them are trying to recuperate from all the coronavirus lockdowns and everything else that's been going on the last 2 years. You know, it puts in a lot of new taxes. It would raise $400 billion, allegedly, from what the Joe Biden administration has said, by creating 88,000 IRS jobs to hound Americans for audits and that sort of thing. So they're really trying to raise taxes and get rid of some of the Trump tax cuts that passed in 2017 that would make it that much harder to compete. So a lot more of these politically oriented industries, whether it's climate change businesses, there's hundreds of billions of dollars in tax credits for electric vehicles. And actually, of all things, electric bikes, which is something that I kind of forgot exists, of all things, too.
Electric bikes. Well, I guess that would require a lot smaller battery. I know here in California, they're getting everybody to go electric, but then they're saying, don't charge your car. You know, I guess you got to set your alarm at 3 a.m. to get up and plug your car in so that, we won't flex alert the power grid out here. Well, we know Joe Biden, day one, he kicked the Keystone Pipeline to the curb. We know he's gone into the strategic reserves. And at the same time, talking about shutting down a pipeline that takes 500,000 barrels of oil a day, the Line 5 pipeline from Canada to Michigan. And it's been obvious from the beginning. He's tried to do everything to drive up the cost of energy. And I'm of the mindset right now that they're intentionally, deliberately driving up the cost of fuel so that, hey, look, we need to go green energy.
Yeah, and that's a very good point there. And it's recently been exhibited by one of President Joe Biden's nominees. She was a nominee for the Treasury Department called the Office of the Comptroller, Sally Amarova.
Oh!
And she, yes, yeah, I'm sure you know of her too. And what's particularly interesting is that she said during a recent conference that she would want to bankrupt natural gas and oil companies so as to force Americans to use these greener technologies, whether it's solar panel, wind, and all these other things. But that would inherently, like you said, jack up energy prices to make them unaffordable and very hard so that everyone would be forced to use these greener technologies. So as we see in Europe, when they use a lot more of these greener energies, energy costs go up. And it makes it harder and less consistent for the energy to come in. So there might be rolling blackouts or energy prices might spike, so it becomes very problematic very quickly if you go that route.
Well, I guess we don't have to wonder, do we, when she's saying we're going to intentionally bankrupt it. That same comptroller talking about no private bank accounts either, right? I mean, that should freak out all Americans. A Federal Reserve account? Oh, I tell you, Sean, I don't know if we're going to be able to get out of this assault on our energy, skyrocketing prices. Where are you in California now, or are you back East Coast?
I'm in the East Coast, in Washington, D.C.
What's gas a gallon there?
It's pretty expensive. Somewhere in the middle of the range for the $3 area. So it's pretty expensive, much more expensive than it was under the Trump administration. That's for sure.
Yeah. Under Trump, I don't even know what gas was. It like a buck something, two something? Was it in that ballpark in D.C.? Have you seen like at least a dollar increase as well? Yeah, I saw some premium at five something here in the Central Valley. You know, we've even heard $6, $7, $8 over closer to the coast. And I guess it's the whole point, right? I guess that's what it is. And it's really an attack on the oil industry, artificially inflating these prices and the supply chain crisis. I mean, I guess Biden yesterday was supposed to talk, and then like 15 minutes before he's supposed to come out, he bailed out on it, right? I guess he's going to talk to us tomorrow about the supply chain crisis.
It sounds like he's definitely going to try and come up with some solutions, or at least try to explain why prices are going to be higher and why it might actually be possible that many presents that people want for Americans, you know, during Christmas is going to be that much harder to get, or for, you know, Hanukkah or any of the other holidays coming up. So it's going to be that much more difficult. But what's particularly interesting to what we're seeing from the president is that he's blaming a lot of these free market companies. You know, he was blaming, you know, meat producers, pork producers for, you know, the increase in meat recently, and energy and gas companies, and was asking the Federal Trade Commission to look into whether there was anti-competitive activity coming, where we can just see what happening is right now under his presidency, 11 months in, that there's clearly prices rising across the board as President Joe Biden spent $1.9 trillion with his coronavirus aid bill that he passed back in May. He spent $1.2 trillion with this so-called bipartisan infrastructure bill, and now we're seeing that he's trying to spend $1.75 trillion with this Build Back Better Act. So that's trillions of dollars of what's spent, and that looks like it may only worsen inflation here too.
It will. Isn't it funny how it's not funny. It's really sad that billions don't sound like much anymore. It used to be we would only say the trillion word when we were talking about, you know, the budget for the year for the federal government. That was the only trillion words. Now they come out every quarter. It's something else. I tell you, Sean, thank you. Good to meet you, Breitbart News Policy Reporter. Of course, you can read him on Breitbart. Anywhere else online, Sean, you want to point folks to follow?
Yeah, you can feel free to follow a lot of my articles and information I post on Twitter at SeanMoran3. And thanks so much for having me. And feel free to follow more of my stuff on Breitbart News.
You betcha, Sean. Thank you. We'll talk again soon, man. Hey, I got a couple good old-fashioned United States racism stories to get us in the Christmas mood next.
This is the Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk. The Trevor Carey Show on the Valley's Power Talk.
I'm dreaming of a non-white Christmas. That's the aim of Black Lives Matter activists here in SMLA, here in California. They here's what they want to do. They want to, all people, spend your Christmas money at only black-owned companies. And they actually talk about pulling investment out of white-owned companies. So now that... I saw some people with Christmas trees up. They're out. They're out at the stores. All that. They're a little pricier. I guess we expected that, right? Started to appear in hashtag Black Xmas. That's the idea from Black Lives Matter in LA, not to spend any money on Christmas items that are not produced by black-owned businesses. Okay. We used to kind of call that like a racist agenda, right? I mean, if you're telling people to divest from white corporations, imagine if this was reversed. Can you imagine urging a boycott? If a white group did that, a boycott of black-owned businesses? My word.
Love a
non-white Christmas. Isn't that so small-minded? That's such a small-minded thought process.
Just like the ones I used to know.
Every racist, no matter the color of the racist, is small-minded.
Where the treetops glisten.
Bankrupt a business.
And children listen.
Because of the owner's skin color.
Who hears? Sleigh bells in the snow.
That's what we call discrimination.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
To take discrimination and wrap it into Christmas?
With every Christmas card I write.
I say that's kind of depressing, whether you're religious or not.
May your day be merry and bright.
Can't we have some love for humanity and come together?
And may all your Christmases be white.
Not in the eyes of Black Lives Matter. We got to crank up racial division.
It's racist.
It's racist. They're directing people to purchase things, items based on their skin color. That's the definition of racism right there. I mean, that's what being racist actually is. But no, let's ignore it all. You can't. If you're going to constantly blow everything up your entire life, it's going to be a never-ending battle, and it's not going to go anywhere. And it was so good to hear Governor Ron DeSantis talking about the media coverage of the race, right? Race is all tied in to all of this, this anti-law enforcement, how they've even covered the Christmas parade with the dude, the racist, took his SUV, right? Governor DeSantis.
One of the things I think that's been most frustrating to witness in terms of law enforcement is how anti-law enforcement narratives are consistently spun by these national corporate media outlets. They will swoop into a community, they will create a false narrative, and then they kind of just leave and they never correct the record when what they're saying is obviously false.
Indeed. And they've actually been reporting. CNN actually reported not a racist driver, not a guy that had anti-white sentiment all over his social media. No, it was an SUV that drove, right?
And we're seeing that right now in real time with Waukesha, Wisconsin, in terms of what happened there. You will look at some of these corporate outlets and they will say that an SUV drove into a parade of Christmas folks. And you're thinking like, really? Is that how it works? The SUVs, they just drive by themselves? This just kind of happened? And they say, oh, this was a big accident. You never actually hear the discussion about who committed this. What was the motivation? This guy was a career criminal, let out on, didn't really have any bail, basically. Should not have even been on the street.
Indeed. Governor DeSantis, man, what a strong governor. He's talking about, you know, no background on the driver, right? Let's hear it.
Had clear anti-white animus, and this was an intentional act. And it seems like, you know, for corporate press, they're more apt to characterize a parent who goes to a school board meeting to protest bad policies as a domestic terrorist than somebody who intentionally rams an SUV into a crowd of innocent people.
Isn't that true? And isn't that so sad that in America today, the domestic terrorist is the parent, the outright racist driving his SUV through a crowd of white people? We don't need to look in on that. Incoming Twitter CEO Parag Agrawal replacing Jack Dorsey as head of that company. This is my second racist story. Ready? He had a quote back 11 years ago. Said that there should be no need to distinguish between white people and racist. That's what the new Twitter CEO felt. Boy, he was on that track over a decade ago, wasn't he? He said free speech is no longer a focus for the company. He said our role is not to be bound by the First Amendment. Our role is to serve a healthy public conversation. We're going to talk to Breitbart's new senior technology correspondent, Alan Bakari, on the show tomorrow about that. Twitter, boy, I tell you what. And a quote from C.S. Lewis, the Screwtape Letters. Let's dig in next.